we're good to go. I think we're good to go. So I'm terrified of taking my anything out now. Or screwing with anything. Which is the way you're supposed to be with computers. Constantly live in fear. Live in fear that by changing one single thing, you'll have to troubleshoot a million other things. That's what programming is about.
You would know. You're a programmer.
I'm a life programmer.
Explain that job to me.
I try and troubleshoot the issues that people are having with surviving, with their health, and try and fix that.
No, my job is much more interesting. So I am a life hacker. So I hack the way that people live their lives.
You're a murderer.
And that's the way you do it. No, I'm a life hack. Like the popular show,
Life Hack. So you're not a murderer. You don't hack people to bits.
Life hack, put toothpaste on everything you own so it doesn't fog up.
I still love that life hack. That's amazing. Also throw everything you own out because it all has toothpaste on it.
What's the deal with games?
I don't know, James. What's the deal with James? For March the 6th be with you?
It's already March. It happens so fast. And it's funny, in March this... We have a nor'easter coming tomorrow, and it's actually the second quote-unquote nor'easter
in a row of March. We're 6 days in.
After a very tame winter.
February.
Now that it's almost over, it's time for some bad weather.
Yeah, but I don't even know how much we're going to get. I think you're getting more in... you're going to get more snow in BK, I heard. I think the city, BK and Queens are getting hit a little harder.
I'm working from home.
Oh yeah, that corresponds nicely with your schedule.
Yeah, but when stuff like this happens, they always just give us free rein to stay home.
That's nice. I can't do that. I wish I could. I worked in that last nor'easter, and thankfully this is hitting Wednesday, which is
so
infrequent.
Why don't you let them come to you? Let the sick people come to you.
Yeah, that's what we should do. We should just chill at a base. And then if you want to be sick, it's like, well, you come here. I'm tired. You come here. I'm chilling right now. I got my pajamas on. I'm not going out to pick you up.
Ryan?
What?
How has your week been going?
My week's been okay. I felt like tummy sickish. I think I did it myself with some spicy halal. I always crash and burn myself. But other than that, I got to demon rank in Dragon Ball FighterZ, which was something that I have worked for pretty hard. Took me like 90. I mean, I have 90 hours in the Steam client. For whatever reason, the game says I have 122 hours, so I don't know who is telling the truth here. But I definitely feel like I worked at that. I have a 60% win rate. I have like 270 games played or something and 170 wins. I'm proud of getting demon rank. I feel like it's pretty high up on the general rankings. And it gets harder obviously to rank up as you go. And I feel like if someone created a graph, then of course it would be very much like other games with rankings, like, you know, League or Overwatch or something, for example, where you have like the majority of people slightly above the beginning, and then there's like a rapid, very steep exponential fall off past that. So I feel like I probably would be in like conservatively like the top 30% on Steam, if not a smaller number, just considering how many people are in the lower rank or in ranks below that. So I feel like, and I also feel like it's a big step because a lot of the lower ranks take a shorter amount of time. There's like less BP, like the less of the ranking points in between hitting a new rank. And then by the rank below it, Supreme Kai, it's a more steep climb to the next thing. And I feel like Supreme Kai was the rank where I started feeling like people were more serious, were picking more meta teams and knew their combos and knew pressure and set play and stuff. So it's gotten much more difficult. You can't really like earlier down the ranks, I could just log in and just win 10 straight games in a row without really doing that much. Just basically just like crouching and waiting for them to do a stupid super dash. And then it definitely gets more complicated. I kind of like, it makes me happy because by Supreme Kai rank and Demon rank, all of the mechanics kind of balance themselves out in a way, because super dashing gets really dangerous, and because both opponents know that it's a huge risk for not as much of a reward. If the opponent is able to anti-air you, then they get more off of it, and the Dragon Rush becomes like a big mechanic. Increasingly, setups to break, to like do block strings and then find places to do this Dragon Rush, which is basically Dragon Ball FighterZ grab, is a bigger deal. So it's been fun.
So before you get too deep in the weeds on it, how are you liking it still? Or do you find it just as enjoyable as you originally did? Do you think that maybe the cast is wearing on you a little bit? What do you think?
Man, that's a really good question, because I could basically speak for Galloway. We have like two different sides of the coin. We're both still playing, but for me, it's like I love this game. Like I love the visuals. I don't get tired of how good stuff looks in this game. I'm not getting tired of like the music or like playing characters I enjoy. The cast's size has certainly become more serious to me over time. It feels like we do need Broly and Bardock soon, and that like I would like to hear a better roadmap. And if it's just more, it's just more because watching these tournaments come out or playing online, you see a small cast of characters, but then you kind of realize like, you know, the amount of playable characters that are like pretty viable is actually it's actually a very high amount. But the reason why you just keep saying the same characters is because there's just not a lot of characters to pick from. Like if there was more, then at the very least, like even if the characters come out and they're mid-tier-ish or whatever, then that strengthens the cast. Then there's people who want to play those mid-tier characters or have reasons for that. So you instead have just a small cast that makes the game look even smaller, or makes characters that are higher tier look even better, just because there's not a lot to choose from. I say that we're like on two different sides of the coin, because Galloway is frustrated with a lot of aspects of the game that I generally I like agree with on some points, but Dragon Ball FighterZ and to a greater extent Dragon Ball itself, I guess, has made me realize and change the way I think about fandoms in a strange way. If I think this sounds very tangenty, but with Dragon Ball FighterZ, I recognize that there are problems, but I'm having so much fun that my brain's first reaction to something online that is like kind of horseshit and maybe shouldn't have been good, or like they weren't smart that they did this, is like not to hate the game, but to say, well, I love the game, so like what's the answer? So how do I prepare myself for this to happen? If they're doing something that's very confusing, can I fight them again and try and be on the lookout for what they're doing more, and try and like figure out what they're doing? And not to his like credit at all, I think Galloway's like phenomenal at fighting games, but he's just more frustrated with some of the aspects of the game that his brain does a completely different thing, and he just gets annoyed when those kind of things happen. And it's like interesting to watch. I haven't felt like this in a while, because I usually am really critical of games, so my first reaction...
So you're a fanboy.
Kind of. It's like my first reaction in a lot of cases to these problems in other games probably would have been like, we need patching now. Like, there needs to be a change. This is broken. I'm not going to play until they fix this kind of thing. But more than, like, I've felt in a long time about any game, I really just want to succeed. And like, that means honing myself to what is currently good and knowing the things people do. And it's almost fun that way. Like it actually ends up being...
By what's currently good, do you mean that you're a meta slave?
No, like not a crazy meta slave. I'm not playing, like, I think I was going to be like a monster meta. I don't have Cell or 16 or Adult Gohan, who I think those three characters are like the literal best characters in the game. So if you wanted to be like a crazy all-time like ironclad tier whore, you'd make a team out of that. So I'm not playing them. It's more like to watch the, like, okay, so here's an example of something. Characters that have a good down two, they're the cast's universal anti-air, can do stuff like end a string.
You said down two.
Two H. Okay. I'm sorry, because I'm getting like, I still get mixed up like half doing the Street Fighter lingo and half doing the anime lingo, because they both have different notations, so I end up like screwing both them up at the same time. But a lot of like, you know, mid-tier gameplay is these kind of like what's the word, like,
there is no word.
Really illegitimate pressure kind of stuff, where it's like, it wasn't a true block string, and they don't know what they're doing, and they just are hitting as many things as possible, almost just to, like, chain together the longest amount of block string. So what they'll do is, like, do a whole block string, end in down two, and then cancel the down two into a super dash. And it ends up, the down two puts you in, like, even blocked, puts you in, like, a pretty neutral or negative state. So
this is too deep.
So the point is that you see it happening so much that your answer can be, well, this is horseshit, or your answer can be, like, literally psychic and counter that. Like, I know you do this, and instead of trying to, like, physically react to it because it's like unreactable and it's a horseshit strategy, if I know that you're going to mindlessly cancel this unsafe thing with a super dash, then I'm just gonna,
well, what if I'm not mindlessly canceling it, Ryan?
That's where, like, then it's fine, because then that's where, like, mind games come in, because then they do mindlessly cancel it and you punish them for it, because it's like, I see this all the time online and I notice that people are just gonna do this, so this is the answer, and then they stop doing it, and by punishing them, it's almost like, you know, in a true fighting game sense, you develop a unique play style with that enemy, where suddenly they see that, like, their go-to stuff isn't working with you, and now they have to switch it up, and how they switch it up on the fly determines who wins, because then if they can switch it up enough that they can keep you guessing, then they can,
it's the Yomi.
Yeah, that's the Yomi. So, like, I guess in short, it's like, I am interested in seeing the Yomi progress. And instead of being frustrated with it, I'm trying to just deal with it. So I'm still really loving it, still liking playing Galway, but he is more frustrated. He hasn't been like, I don't want to throw shade on Galway, but in the Marvel era, he got very frustrated with a lot of the illegitimate stuff in that game and would, like, really get angry, and it made it not fun to play games with him. And he never got that way with Tekken at all. Like, Tekken and Galway and I had amazing times playing Tekken. We could play for, you know, we played one day for like 12 hours, 16 hours straight one time, and we never got frustrated with the game, or he never got frustrated with how I was, like, being abusive of, like, some of the cheaper game mechanics. Because I do feel like I tend to gravitate to stuff that, like, I see stuff that works and I employ it, even if it's, like, kind of shady.
Do you think that maybe this is because Tekken is a better game? Is that a loaded opinion? Because it is how I feel.
It's I don't want to say that so narrowly. I don't want to say that so objectively. Tekken is a phenomenal game, and one of the things going into Tekken is that Tekken has largely not changed. It has changed in small ways from Tekken 1 to Tekken 7. So in each iteration, it kind of was more of a balance patch. So over the years, it's kind of gotten to this like hyper state of like chess style balance. And Tekken allows for so many options that all allow for very clear, precise in-game counters if you learn them. Like, nothing in Tekken works if people are smart or know you're going to do it. And in anime games, just this is the way it is. Like, in Marvel or in I guess in, like, these, like, madcap kind of 3v3 games, it's like, you are going to get hit, and you're going to lose a character, and you're going to play a game, you're going to play a round where, like, one of your strongest characters on your team that you have, like, the most lab time behind and the most experience on just gets completely, like, randomed out by a guess, and then you get thrown in the corner, and then you're guessing again, but there's just so much pressure on you that, like, it's insane, and you just fold, and then you lose that character, and now it's a 2v3, and you feel like, well, what happened? Like, that's frustrating. Like, I don't know that I ever really had a choice, and it's just a different type of game, I think. Like, it's a more, like, DBZ ends up being very scramble-based, whereas Tekken is very neutral, and I think people appreciate that, because it, like, Tekken has a strong neutral, so you feel like you're getting choices. Whereas DBZ, sometimes your choices are insanely limited because your opponent is, like, in your face and constantly putting you in block stun and then, like, mixing you up, and you're just constantly, like, how do I get out of this? Like, I don't even know.
I feel like I'm kind of just over tag games. I feel like this is sort of the nail in the coffin for me on tag games.
You think so? I mean, I don't disagree. I remember you were talking about last week that you like in fighting games when you can have a more fleshed out character that has their one gimmick, and you get to choose kind of like what's the character you want and what makes them special. Whereas in the tag games, the characters are a little bit more watered down because you're having to pick three at the same time. And because of that, like, you have like different weird gimmicks that like aren't as complete or like fully fleshed out as they would be in a 1v1. And I understand that.
I'm hoping that this game brings a little bit more like eyes on Arxis, and that maybe like a Guilty Gear could be a nice big game that people play a lot of.
I don't
think so.
I think that could happen. I think that the litmus for that would be BlazBlue Crosstag. That comes out like May.
It's another tag game.
And it's a 2v2 tag game, but since it's an Arxis kind of thing and it's combining like all these different IPs, I think that it would be interesting to see if that game gets a boost based off the fact that people are so much more tuned in to maybe fighting games as a whole. Like, I think we'll see then if that game sells really well, because I think in a world without DBZ fighters, that game will not sell well. But let's say that game does sell well and does have high support at tournaments and like big player turnout and good Twitch numbers. I would in fact pre-attribute that to Dragon Ball FighterZ getting a lot of, because there are a lot of people who got in just, you know, with Dragon Ball FighterZ just sold so much that there were a lot of people who were Dragon Ball fans or maybe just heard word of mouth and checked this out, and it's easier to learn, and maybe it gave people a taste of it, and maybe when another kind of big fighting game comes out that's a little bit similar to it, because it's also a tag game and it's also an anime game, maybe people will be more reticent to jump on it. And I think that's the litmus, is like, if that game does well, then I would expect the next Guilty Gear or the next Guilty Gear iteration to do a little bit better than it would have pre-Dragon Ball FighterZ.
unfortunately, what's more likely to happen is that people won't like the game, and then Arxis momentum will drop, and then they'll sort of just have this one game to depend on, and then we'll just have a lot more DBZ fighters and a lot less of everything else.
I mean, they survived without DBZ fighters for so long. I think that's not true to think that if Blaze Blue Cross Tag doesn't sell well, that they're just going to say, well, it's only DBZ fighters. I wouldn't even, I wouldn't 100% mind that, because I like that game a whole ton. So, yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see.
We'll see.
So yeah, I have been playing a lot of Dragon Ball FighterZ, of course.
So a lot of last week I spent playing Into the Breach, and that's a pretty good game.
Oh yeah, we haven't talked about this. I thought this was going to be a very Poe-oriented episode, but we got Dragon Ball FighterZ out first, and then Into the Breach.
So Into the Breach is the second game by, what are they, Subset or Sunset Games, something like that, creators of FTL. So it's been, this is sort of their sophomore project, their second one. And it's a lot different, I'll tell you that, from FTL. It is a tactics game, right? Like it's a strategy game where you control three units on an 8x8 grid. And we didn't know this in the last episode, but it turns out it actually does have like some roguelike elements. It is procedurally generated levels.
And procedurally generated reward kind of things, and when you die, you lose progress.
Yeah, so the idea of this is that you choose a team of three mechs, usually one punching mech, one tank mech, and one artillery mech, although that can change later, and then you are tasked with defending sort of a city for five turns against an invasion of these alien bugs called the Vec. And you're sort of at this advantage because you know what the Vec are going to do on their next turn. So once you manipulate them or move them, let's say that you use an artillery blast that knocks them away, they're still locked into doing the attack that they were going to do. So you could, for example, push an enemy into the line of sight of another enemy, and he will then hit him. And pretty much a lot of this game is based around the way that you move not only your own units, but also the enemy units. And it's also a game about minimizing loss, but realizing that loss is an inevitability, where sometimes you're going to have to put your units in the way of harm in order to defend a building, or you might need to forfeit an objective or some defense health in order to make something happen in a way that will make your run better.
Yeah,
it's a challenging game, and I think that a lot of it is based on understanding which losses are worth taking.
There's a couple interesting things that you like half mentioned there. Yeah, the game is about moving, like it is a tactics game, and it's about like knowing what the enemy can do and thereby moving their pieces around to be like less effective or to like hurt their own units. But like sort of the main, one of the main important things is not only if your people die, it's that you're protecting buildings, and it has this sort of kaiju, like Godzilla thing going on, where the Vex are these like massive creatures, and you're in these massive mechs, like Pacific Rim style, and you're defending civilization. Not only like are you defending buildings that have civilians in it, and like those losses matter, but you're also defending a power grid, because when the power grid completely goes down, the Vex will like spawn in and completely ruin the run. So you have to, it is like a very stressful kind of game where every turn matters so much, because you're juggling so many plates. Like even if you have multiple Vex on screen, and you only if you have like five Vex enemies and you have three of your units, then like sometimes you have to, like sometimes there's gonna be a time where you have no choice but to let a building get hit, and for the rest of your run you're losing that, like you have like a set amount of power grid, and for the rest of your run, you're like losing that power grid. And at the end of, and like you go to these islands and you have to complete the whole, the island until like a like final mission kind of thing appears. At the end of the islands, you get to choose like to spend on upgrades or to spend on getting your power grid back. So your individual turns can matter so much. If you're losing, like if you're winning but you're not winning pretty, then it's going to hurt your overall run. So you really have to like be as like tightly knit as possible. You have to make sure that like as little damage is caused to buildings, as little damage is caused to the power grid, and that you're also completing like multiple objectives. So you're really like spinning a lot of plates, because you don't want your vehicles to die, because it'll kill the pilot inside, which makes the vehicle weaker for the rest of the run unless you get another pilot. You don't want the power grid to take damage, because that's overall damage that like you have to deal with in like from map to map. You don't want civilians to die, because it lessens your reward and your reputation. And while you're dealing with all this, you're having to deal with like sub objectives that possibly make it harder to just focus on the Vex threat, where you're having to spend turns doing things that are like suboptimal so you can complete an objective that will be greater in the grand scheme, but like maybe hurt you in that game if you're spending units turns like doing essentially nothing. So it ends up being like really complicated and very punishing.
Yeah, but it also plays out in pretty brief play sessions. I think maybe like 30 minutes will get you through a run, depending on how far you take it. So essentially the way that this works, and you know, we sort of covered this, is that there's these different islands that you visit. And some of the islands will have different mechanics. Like there's a ice island where some of the buildings can be frozen, and when they're frozen, they don't take damage until the ice is broken. Or there's like a trash planet where there's all this nuclear waste around, so you could move the enemies into the nuclear waste and things like that. And there's also going to be different Vec that you're running into on the different planets. But essentially, after you've done two out of the four islands, you can choose to face the final event in the game, or you could wait until you've done four. And it scales it either way, so the balance is like the same either way. It's just, what kind of challenge do you want? Like, what kind of run do you want? And so far, I've cleared the game once on normal difficulty in a two-island run. And it came down to the very last turn, and I just eked out a win at the very end. But one of the things that I have found so compelling so far is just unlocking the different units. So one of the units, you sort of start out with this very basic squad that is just the punch man, the tank, and the artillery. But I also unlocked this squad that's based on storm clouds. Essentially, they have like this jet, and the jet is able to fly over the enemies. And the jet drops a smoke, and the smoke also deals damage to the units while they're in it, and it makes it so that they can't hit buildings. So it both like incapacitates them and does damage. And it's very cool, but there's also this trade-off of your units can't stand in smoke and attack either. So if you fill the board up with too much smoke, you're going to put yourself in a situation where you can't retaliate against the Vec. So they seem to be doing so much with this, you know, seemingly small amount of space that they put into the game, where it's small. It's, you know, this 8x8 grid where you're just moving three units, but it's extremely deep because they really do take this to its sort of logical conclusion. And they sort of imagine the possibilities of everything that you could want in a game like this and do it in terms of diversity of classes.
What are your feelings overall?
This game's excellent. I wish this is, oh man, I bet everyone is tired of hearing this from every podcast and from every reviewer ever, but damn if this wouldn't make a great Switch game.
I knew what you were going to say before you said it.
Yeah, I'm really taken by this game, and it's easy to just like put in a half hour and maybe try out a new mech that I haven't tried before. And one of the things that's cool is I mentioned that different squad that's like focused on doing the storm clouds. You can actually mix and match the different units. So I could take like the push robot, and then I could take like the jet that drops smoke, and I could, you know, bring them in together and get different things. One of the things that we also haven't covered yet is the time traveling aspect, where once a run ends, you can take one of your pilots and send them into the next run, essentially into another timeline, into the breach, if you will.
I will.
This game is really exciting, and I think that it also shows a pretty good, I don't know if the word is like diversity or scope, or it shows a lot of talent. It shows that the FTL team is not a one-note team, and that they're really, you know, a couple of guys to be looking for, to be paying attention to in this space of indie games.
Also, I'm saying it every week, man. Pixel games. It's a lot of pixel games.
And we're also, you know, we're still in the state of not knowing what's going to come out and what's going to be surprising this year. And I think Into the Breach is one of those games where we didn't expect it, but it's good and it's surprising.
Yeah, I wanted to spend more time with it, but it wasn't like, I felt like I needed to put more time in to be better, that I was like not really, like I was only just kind of starting to get the hang of it a couple hours in, and our next game has kind of, because it's not on the Switch, it's like the next game kind of kills it for me.
You're probably talking about Path of Exile Bestiary.
I am.
So this is not considered an expansion, which is surprising. This is just a new league of content for Path of Exile, in which they introduce, I don't know, like another 54 uniques into the game. And then this whole capturing mechanic for beasts, which essentially lets you Monster Hunter style take creatures and use their parts for gear.
Kind of Monster Hunter style, but also kind of Pokemon style, because you're not fighting big monsters in crazy interesting ways. You're more like weakening than capturing the monsters.
Throwing a Pokeball at them.
What?
You just throw that Pokeball right at them.
Yeah. It was this. It was the uniques. It was the ascendancy changes. So what are your overall thoughts? There was also three gems. I'm playing one of the gems, Tectonic Strike.
Oh, man. This Chance dog to. Is just crying. Yeah, he's excited to talk about this league, but he's also just
hungry.
Desperate for pets. He is desperate for pets. So at the start, I thought that the capture mechanic was kind of wonky, because they had this system in the game where you could throw a net at a legendary creature, and there's a chance that the creature could just immediately break out of it, because its health was too high. So the idea is that they want you to lower the health of the creature and then throw an edit it to capture it. But there's an issue where there are certain characters and certain like classes that are focused around one-shotting or focused around culling an enemy, which is insta-killing it as soon as it hits low health. So for example, there's a character called Slayer, and the Slayer has a built-in culling ability. So whenever a creature reaches 20%, they will instantly die. And that is sort of against this capping mechanic that requires you to have a monster down to 10 to 15% health. Or maybe you're playing a character like I was playing, which is a Flame Blast character, which is, I'm probably going to hit the enemy once. I'm going to wind up, I'm going to do a big attack, and it's going to die. And that sort of put me at a disadvantage, and a lot of people were sort of turned off to this mechanic. And over the weekend, this released on Friday, and by Sunday, GGG have fixed it. They essentially just made the window work differently, where now if you throw a net at a creature, it's going to stay in that net for 3 seconds, and then it'll break out and enrage and recover its health and everything. But it continues to be crazy how quick GGG is to update and fix the game, even on the weekends right after releasing a massive content patch.
Yeah, that's very admirable. But
other than that, I'm playing a new character that I haven't played before. I'm playing a character based on totems, which surprisingly in my 800 hours of play, I've never really touched. So it is pretty fresh for me. It's hard for me to understand how different the class that I'm playing is now that they've... One thing that we briefly mentioned in other podcasts is that they sort of updated every class in the game, all 19 Ascendancy classes with new abilities. And the Hierophant is apparently much, much stronger. They're essentially like a class that summons a totem, and then the totem will cast a spell or will do an attack on behalf of the Hierophant. And essentially what they did is they just gave it a lot more totems. So they just took the totem class and they gave it more, which has been fun to play with. But it's hard for me to really judge, you know, how much has changed because I haven't really played this class before.
Similarly, I'm at a point where I haven't gotten the ascendancies yet, so it's like I feel really weak right now. I'm probably doing like less damage than I've ever done on any character. I don't know if it's like my weapon is bad, and also I'm at a point in the skill tree where I've only taken like lots of life nodes, so I don't really have like good synergistic damage nodes. I'm also playing a character that archetype I've never played before, which is Tectonic Juggernaut, the Juggalo class.
Yeah, and I don't think that class actually gets good until you have access to a lot of endurance charges.
Yeah.
So I think that the best way to do that would be to level with Sunder and then transition over to Tectonic Strike later on.
I have Sunder as well.
I think the main thing that you should be doing also is really just taking a look at that beast crafting and seeing if there's maybe a weapon or something you could look at, because the beast crafting is absolutely insane, and the things that it gives you access to are absolutely insane. It's totally changed the market of this league, because uniques that were previously very difficult to get, like the Brutus Led Sprinkler, which is this extremely powerful mace that has a very low item level, it's extremely accessible. And also people have more headhunters now than before, because there's a recipe that lets you beast craft a unique belt. So the market is sort of in an upheaval, and it's very interesting to watch. And it's also enabling a lot of builds that were previously gated by currency to sort of appeal to the masses.
I think it's been interesting so far. My first thought with it is that the whole beast thing and the throwing the net is like, this game wasn't made for it, and I admire their attempt to make it as like smooth as possible, but I still feel like it is a really janky, weird mechanic. I had to move it. It was originally keybound to V, which was like impossible to hit while I'm trying to do other stuff and to like target. So I keybound it to one of my extra mouse buttons, and that's made it a little bit easier. Just mouse over it and click a mouse button while I still have my hands on flasks and attack stuff. But it ends up being really wonky too, because you get these big groups of enemies, and like targeting the enemy or knowing when to throw the net can get kind of frustrating. For now, I don't have, like, eventually in my ascendancy, I'll have 1,000 plus accuracy or something. But right now my damage is like kind of inconsistent. So I'll try and get the beast low, and then sometimes just like crit and kill it. Or get the beast low, and then I'm hitting them and it's like not doing enough, and then they enrage and I have to wait around to be able to throw another net. Or you have big packs of mobs, or mobs that are spawning other mobs, or other mobs that are coming into the room, and it ends up being like a little frustrating trying to move around and separate what I want so I don't misclick something, because that's happened before. It's a wonky additional mechanic that was definitely like nowhere near intended. But I think they've done as good as they can, and I know they're continuing to improve it. They were talking about possibly adding a net that would be usable on dead creatures. But I think the community is kind of against.
No, I think they took a community poll, and I think that it just eked out a victory. I could be wrong.
Huh. I when I had seen the poll, it was pretty strongly in favor of no. I think that it would be fine if there was like a rarer net that was like harder to obtain that did allow you to grab dead enemies, because sometimes, like, as hard as I try, the enemy just dies before I can do something. When I have them low enough, it's also kind of it also is like kind of frustrating because it does slow things down a lot. I don't do a lot of damage, and I don't really try to sit around and DPS the higher health targets, but you run into these red and yellow capture targets that are on the map that the game is telling you like you really should capture them, because they're like uniques that can be used for better.
Those are what you use for the unique crafting.
For unique crafting and better recipes, but I end up just like spending a lot of time sitting around DPSing a high health target, and you get to the end of the fight and you're like trying to hit him, and sometimes like the net doesn't seem to go off or something, and there's been all this like other jankiness that like is associated. And I know I've heard other people say they have the same kind of problems, that there's times where like the net doesn't really seem to go off. I think another thing GGG was talking about was making nets aerial or like proximity, kind of, where they would capture everything in a zone. So rather than like having to find the mob in a big mess on the screen that you want to capture, you would just throw it at the general kind of direction of it and then capture the things killed in it. That could make it a little bit smoother. It was a little more frustrating in the beginning, but I'm getting the hang of it more. I do have some other questions though. I logged in and I had no beasts.
Oh yeah, so I think that's due to their recent hot fix, but the way that you fix that is you walk into a menagerie, and if you essentially it loads the monsters in, and then if you go back out, it will display them all. So that's a known bug right now.
That's pretty bad. I've heard people who like were so infuriated by that, and like I had a really like disgusting reaction to that of like, this whole thing blows if they're really telling me that when I log off I lose all that. So they want me to like what all like either log in for the sole purpose of like specifically.
I think you're confused.
No, I know it's not. I'm saying is remedied and it's actually a bug, but like it's pretty shitty to see that originally. And I've heard people just like infuriated by that. So that's a weird, even with that not being true and you being able to go to the menageries to load in the monsters, that's kind of frustrating as well. Like that obviously needs to be fixed pretty soon, because I don't want to like have to log in and visit every type of menagerie to be able to look at my currently held beasts.
Yeah, I mean, it takes like a brief second, but I understand.
It obviously shouldn't be that way. Like that is a frustration. I guess, you know what? Maybe this is that thing rearing its head that I was talking about of like, with me, my reaction is that it's frustrating that it's like that, but you're just so in love that you're like, you know what? Even if it's broken, I'm still gonna find a way around.
No, because it takes like literally less than 5 seconds to fix. Once you know
less
the way
than
to
five
fix
seconds.
It.
I've also been having issues with the servers. So I've been having longer load times into certain areas or complete crashes on trying to enter an area. There was a time where I was trying to enter an area and I sat around and it said couldn't load instance. And I tried it again and it said couldn't load instance. And then eventually it crashed to the login screen. I've been having that issues like that. There was a complete crash like yesterday where it kicked everyone off the server.
Yeah, that happens at the start of leagues.
But I do appreciate the very concept of it. It is really cool to have something that helps people get more comfortable with a character early on, I really do appreciate the fact that with the recipes, if you've been diligent and you're capturing things, then I was free. I think one of the bigger things I was able to do at this point was make myself like movement speed boots. So that's a good thing to be able to say, like literally I want strength movement speed boots, and maybe I won't play another 40 hours. I might never see decent strength movement speed boots. But doing this and like being diligent with your captures allows you to, you know, make up for the problems with your current gear set. So I do appreciate that. I feel like it's a big boost to, I from hearing you say that, like, people are, have the Headhunter recipe, which is a really rare, insanely, rare and coveted, like unique, like, it's cool that it's helping people in the end game, but maybe it's even cooler, at least for me now, that it helps you along the game, where you can, like, precisely target, like, I need new gloves, because these gloves absolutely suck. I haven't even realized that I haven't replaced them since level 9, and then be able to go and beastcraft a new pair of gloves that, like, hopefully are just straight up better in every way.
Also, I really like Aramar, the guy who sort of introduces you to, like, the Beast League and the Beast mechanics. He's it's weird because this is a game that doesn't have a lot of comic relief, and sometimes you just, like, throw a net on a monster and, like, this giant green portal appears and he walks out of it and he's just like, "Stupid beast, you have been captured," and then he just, like, throws them through the portal.
Yeah,
and it's ridiculous.
That's another thing that's wonky. Like, I feel like it's a pretty buggy league to start out. Like, there's a lot of stuff that it seems like they weren't sure that they would encounter. I saw an image of Aramar blocking the path out because he spawns and he takes the beast, but he just stands there after that. So that can get kind of annoying, and also it takes him, like, a while to, like, sit there and do his animation. I had a time where I was waiting around for him to finish his animation because the beast itself was blocking my path to the next room. So I was just kind of standing around, like, waiting for him to finish, which, like,
it's, stupid beast.
It's, like, minor gripes, but it's, like, it's, like, a big, it's, like, they bit off a lot, and they did a big major thing, and I greatly admire that, and I think, like, they will continue to work on it and polish it out more, but it does feel initially like this league was, like, unpolished, but they are rapidly fixing that. Like, especially to hear the day one problems of how bad that is and how, like, they created a mechanic that they never thought, like, how it would interact with, like, bursty characters or one-shot characters or cull characters. Like, that's a really weird oversight. I also kind of liked, like, I don't think this is, like, a remotely popular opinion, but I liked the Abyss League a lot because, it was the big monster density league. Like, as I was leveling up, I was way over leveling areas because you'd find these rifts and follow the rifts and fight tons and tons of enemies on the way. And I feel like I was always getting, like, pretty good stuff from the rifts, and that was really exciting. And that I was also, like, constantly engaged in, like, big, like, awesome fights. And with this league, it's, like, very, it's, like, slowed things down a little bit more, which does give Path a different flavor that I think a lot of people have been, like, kind of asking for a while, like, a slower meta instead of just, like, running around all the place. Like, you sit there, like, DPSing or, like, taking care of a beast and watching its health to get low enough to throw the net or something like that. So it's a little bit more of, like, a finesse. Like, this league has a little bit more finesse and requires you to, like, stand around doing something way more than any other leagues would. It's going to be kind of weird. Like, I especially with this league, like, I wonder what the overall, like, what they'll keep and what they'll get rid of. This is, like, an insane addition to the game, man. Like, a bonkers addition. It kind of, like, you would, like, I only came in with, what was it, War for the Atlas? or Fall of Oriath. I came in with Fall of Oriath, and I feel like this is one of the most crazy, wild, out there things that they added. Like a whole new like character that has this like massive bestiary mechanic, and now you have to find these rope currencies to be able to do this whole thing where you're hunting down monsters in levels to DPS them low enough to grab them. It's like, it changes so much of that game. Like, this one league is like a massive shift.
Some of it has to stay because it's just crazy how like well detailed the like bestiary is, and the menagerie and all of the aesthetics that they put into it, sort of like all the new menus and stuff that are very well designed. Because of that, I would be really surprised if they threw it away, but whether it stays or goes is usually based on public reception.
I don't know. Like, I feel like maybe some of my gripes of the league or frustrations are more due to my character, because as you said, like, I just really am not getting going yet. Like, Path always has, and I think it's important, and I do appreciate the fact that you start out kind of slow and weak, and then you're watching your character bloom as you're getting further down the talent tree and unlocking your ascendancies and getting better gear, and you hit like that break point where everything is just kind of firing, and it's like, it's only so satisfying because you spend time knowing how weak and slow you were, so like that build gives you something to work for, and then when you're there, it's exciting because you know how much work you put into it, and how exciting it is to see it when it's like fully going. But I am not like remotely there. Like, I did not think, like, I thought this was going to be a good league starter, so I kind of thought, like, because I've never played Marauder before, I've never even played like a tanky melee character. Like, if you look at back at all the characters I play, like, I played a lot of the ranged character, and a lot of Inquisitor. So I just don't have never played like a sundering, like tanky leap slam brawlery character before. So this is weird for me. And I'm not initially having fun because it's like very slow. It's very, very slow.
What
right
motivated
now.
You to play Tectonic Strike?
What
motivated you to play Tectonic Strike?
Well, think about it. Isn't it kind of like a good example of something I want to pick? Usually when a new league comes out, if it comes with gems, it's something that I want to look at the new gems. So I was interested immediately in Spectral Throw or Tectonic Strike. New league, new me, man. Like, I love that. I totally love the concept of leagues, and I lean into it. Like, a new league is not, like, I have characters that I have enjoyed very much. Like, I have a couple characters that I would say that, like, I super like certain gems and certain concepts and builds. I really do like that, like the Whirlwind arrow. I'm forgetting the name. Cyclone Arrow or something like that?
Tornado Shot.
What is it?
Tornado Shot.
Like, I really like that. I think it's immediately satisfying to use that ability and like have a lot of pierce on it, and then just it feels awesome to use, but I don't know if I would ever do it again because I try and use the leagues as like a way to start over and completely look in a different direction. So this was like, for me, one of the biggest changes that I could go for is like, I've never played a strength character. Like, I've never played like a really solid strength character that was all about like tankiness and jumping in. Like, a friend of the show, Austin, has played, like, typically plays like Marauder in like every league and does like some form of that, like Berserker or something. So Juggernaut just felt like it was, when I saw that as a league starter and I saw it use Tectonic Strike and that was a new gem, like, it was a very easy choice. But like I said, right now, like, it's not paying off very satisfyingly. Like, I feel like a lot of other builds that I've played by, you know, level 30 or mid 30s, you start to get to a point where, like, you are just a gross monster and your damage output is bonkers and you are able to, like, wipe enemies and you're moving around fast. And I am like slow as hell. I am like a lumbering, like a man just waffling around doing like, you know, tiny little scratches, just sitting there. Like I have time. I have all these health nodes, so I'm pretty tanky still, even in the bad gear that I'm using. But so I end up just like fighting a boss and just holding down left click tectonic strike. And while I'm doing that, I'm like, my left hand is on my phone, like texting, or I'm drinking something or eating something and like just not paying attention, because it's like that boring at the moment.
What kind of tectonic strike are you doing? Like a staff build?
I haven't narrowed that down yet. So I'm leaving myself very open to either go, because I had originally looked at a guide that was a mace guide, that was a two-hand mace guide, and when I looked at the person's like original guide for it, it was all these two-hand mace stuff. But then when I looked at the current character, he had switched over to dual wielding maces, and so like maybe that's a better choice. But because
do you know
of that,
what maces? Because I'm wondering, because a lot of people right now are transitioning their builds to Brutus Led Sprinkler, because like I said, it's an insanely powerful weapon that's now immediately accessible. So that might be something that you would want to look into to improve your character.
I mean, it would be a big improvement, but I also haven't hit that point in leagues that I hope to hit. I mean, I'm not really in the window yet, but getting that first exalt is like a big major thing, because I play like league startery characters, and I never get characters that are, I never do builds that are that currency intense. But when I find an exalt for the first time in a league, it really allows me to play more of like the mid, like it's suddenly I go from like that league starter to more of the mid to high tier character, where I can really like outfit and get some stronger uniques and optimize my gear.
So
I'm not even at
end
game yet, so
though.
I can't be is, like...
Yeah, but you can farm the beasts and you can get stuff that way. What I did to kickstart my league is I used the beast crafting on unique chest pieces, and then I got a tabula rasa the first day. I sold it, and then I just bought all the gear that my build required.
I probably wouldn't sell a tabula rasa right now, to be honest. For you, I understand, but if I got a tabula, I probably would keep it.
Yeah, but it's the same sort of thing. What I mean is you can use the beast crafting in sort of to empower yourself. You could just, if you want a Brutus Led Sprinkler, you can just use beast crafting and make it.
That's something like, I've been just trying to level, but maybe like today or tonight or something, I'll try and go back and just like spend time doing crafting. That's something that like I've been really diligent about capturing, but I haven't really gone to the menagerie a lot to craft.
Well, there you go.
I usually do two characters per league, and I think my next one, I'm going to wait to see what kind of comes out, but I'm looking for more like assassin, I think I'm looking at next.
If you want to play something totally different, you could play like Blade Vortex, which is like on the opposite side of the melee spectrum. It's actually a spell, but it's a very close range spell. Or you could just do, I don't know, have you done mines yet? Mines are very good right now.
I've never done mines. Who does mines, Saboteur or?
Saboteur.
Okay.
So Glacial Cascade mines are very powerful right now. People keep anticipating a nerf on Glacial Cascade, and it just doesn't seem to happen. So Glacial Cascade, very powerful.
I'm just hoping that this character kicks off eventually. Like, maybe I'll do something different, because I think this is a type of build, like with Juggernaut, that could like scale very well with the right items. So maybe like I level this one up and make an alt that like is less money intense, and then make enough money to like buy some of the more crazy uniques. Like, I bet this is obviously the character that like Belly of the Beast is like a must have, right?
Yeah, I actually dropped a Belly of the Beast today and I sold it. And then I just bought tons of gear. And I'm just sitting on all this beautiful gear. It was the first time I've ever dropped an item like Belly of the Beast.
I have never gotten a good item.
I actually got it out of a prophecy. because they also enriched prophecies and made prophecies sort of like better and added a bunch of new ones this league. So it's also good to see that they're revisiting old league mechanics and making them better. I look forward to more Path of Exile and trying to figure out what kind of character I want to play next.
They keep getting closer. Like every time I'm liking the expansion so much, and I was looking, it's insane. I have like 270 like hours or 280 hours in that game on Steam. I play that game a lot, and every expansion keeps getting closer to like perfect for me. So I'm always excited to see these expansions because I feel like they're inching along and they're really getting there. And it's exciting to watch the game get better and better and better for free.
And one day they're going to make that perfect expansion and then they're going to ruin it the next league. And that's just part of the cadence.
You think so? Because I feel like none of the leagues have like ruined it for me, but...
No, I don't think so. But people always complain about like they find this character or this build that they're really in love with. For a lot of people, that was like Ignite builds that double dipped into poison damage. And a lot of people fall in love with something and then it gets taken away from them. And that can bother people. But at the same time, I think that that makes the game more interesting because if you have one build that is just so awesome and it's the only build you want to play, and then that build gets taken away, then they're not removing something. What they're doing instead is they're opening up the doorway to all of the other types of builds that you could play. And I think that that's a good way of doing it. I think that makes a lot of sense.
And for me, since I play different things every league and I never really return to the old things, if I found something in a league that I was loving so much, I probably wouldn't return to it the next league, even if it was still good.
I think a character that's also really powerful right now is Champion. Champion seems like a very, very strong tank character and a great team character because of the taunting ability that it now has. What about some other games? I don't know. Maybe we could talk about... you see this new League of Legends Ultimate skin?
The Misfortune?
Gun Goddess Misfortune? That's a pretty slick skin. But I guess you're not very interested in League of Legends anymore these days, huh?
Not at the moment. Not at the moment.
Do you know what the meta is right now?
No.
Banner of Command.
I had seen that.
It's all about Banner of Command and getting Baron while you have Banner of Command. And then the minion zapper ability that insta-kills like an enemy minion. So it's essentially like this tug-of-war push-a-pull of like, do they have the minion destabilizer up? Do they have Banner of Command? Are they going for Baron? That game has always got something going on, and it is fun to watch. We also didn't talk about Brigitte.
Yeah. I played her on the PTR. That's the new Overwatch character.
What do you think of the new Overwatch character? I'm glad that they are sort of realizing that they have enough DPS characters and that adding more tanks and adding more supports is what's going to make the game more interesting. That's my opinion. What do you think?
I should love Brigitte because Brigitte is a like crusader archetype or like a paladin. She has a flail and a shield that's mainly a self shield and has all these healing mechanics. She has her left click is swings the flail. Her right click brings up the shield. While the shield's up, you can press E or something like or shift or something to charge forward and shield bash to like stun targets. When the shield's down, you can press E to fling out the flail forward. It's pretty high range, and when it hits targets, it knocks them back. And wait a minute, that's her shift. Actually, that's her shift. And then her E throws a Zenyatta orb style thing where you can like target an ally and then throw a heal at them. And if it overheals, it gives them armor. And then her ultimate is an AoE that heals and works similarly to the last mentioned ability, the aforementioned ability, where it can overheal and give armor. And lastly, she has a passive in her kit where when she hits with her left click, she applies a buff to nearby allies that is like 16 health per second over 5 seconds or something. It equals out to like 80 damage, but every single time you hit 80 health. But I think when you, but if you keep hitting, the buff doesn't stack, but it reapplies. She's a really interesting character. I love the concept. I love the way she looks. I am a huge fan of paladins and tanky healers that like put themselves on the front line. Maybe they don't do damage, but they're like, not only are they tanking, but they're also helping allies. That's always like a big RPG archetype that I go for. Like paladin was like my character in WoW, in Final Fantasy. Like I really like that archetype. For now, like playing her on the PTR, her left click is like really wonky. It doesn't have the polish of a lot of other Blizzard characters, and it's also like there was a big post about this, but I agreed with it. I was kind of thinking it before this person wrote up like a very exhaustive, nice post to talk about it. But like the left click doesn't have the signature Overwatch like flair or style. Like it feels like not only does it feel really weak, and it's fine if she's not doing that much damage, but it doesn't feel impactful or fun to use, and it also looks visually uninteresting. It kind of is just like a more bland version of Reinhardt's hammer swing, but his hammer swing is like massive and it knocks people around, whereas Brigitte's is like has a similar cadence of like back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, but like its hitbox is way smaller and weirder to connect with, and it doesn't have like a meaningful impact, and nor does it look interesting when you're playing that character. It is really hard to tell on the PTR how characters will ever work out, because you end up playing on sure. No limits. What?
Sure, yeah.
So I haven't gotten a good sense of like where she would fit with on a team. I think in her current iteration, she's terrible.
Sad.
I think she's absolutely terrible in her current iteration. I think that there are some things that need to be really tweaked before she ever comes to live if she's gonna be decent, and I feel like they might not happen, and I feel like she'll have to be tweaked afterwards. I feel like she's terrible because she doesn't do very much if she's not in the front lines. Like you kind of want to be like, I went like in reading that list of abilities she has, the main thing she can do if she's not putting herself in harm's way is throw that like target heal on cooldown, but that's only doing so much, because that's like if you're gonna like imagine a character that isn't that like a Zenyatta orb is on cooldown, like Zenyatta already doesn't like he does kind of like backward back like he's like the off healer, like he's like healing over time, but it's not keeping people alive through burst damage, but because he's doing so much healing over time and applying this debuff, and he's also a nice range character, he ends up working out very well. Whereas Brigitte, like, this is Zenyatta's heal on a cooldown, and she's a melee character that has 250 health, so you can't really, if the whole team is clumped up, like, I can't really imagine her having enough health to, like, get in there. The Inspire, the passive, is that is 16 health per second over 5 seconds or whatever. I don't know. I can't really imagine her, like, having the tools or the health or anything to be able to, like, sit there and, like, sit in a team fight and, like, constantly be hitting targets and healing her allies. So she just doesn't seem like there's currently a real strong spot for her. It also feels like if she were good, that her counters would just like run rampant and would make it so that she could never be played. Like if you think about like old Pharah, like, she could never see pro or high skill play because she was so hard countered. And if you ever pick that character, people would just switch over and counter her. So I feel like if she was seeing play, people would just go with like Soldier or McCree to be able to put out good sustained damage and just kill her if she tries to get on the front lines, because she's just not that tanky.
Sad.
So I don't know. Like I'm impressed with the aesthetic. I'm impressed with the vision. I love that archetype, and it's something that hasn't been explored. But as it is currently, I feel like it's doesn't really have a place. And I'm also thinking about how teams currently work out. Like, if there's two spots for like a lot of like on a really traditional Overwatch team, it's like the two DPS, two healers, two tanks kind of thing. Maybe three tanks and one DPS or something. I can't imagine real spots where like you would want her over another healer or another tank, because she doesn't do enough of either direction. Like she's not a tank in that she's going to soak up a lot of damage and defend her allies and like create discord kind of the way that like other tanks kind of can, but she's also not a healer in the way that she can like save people through burst damage if they're being focus fired. She's more of like a real off healer, off tank. So it's like weird to see like on a team of six, how does that fit? If I'm looking at current teams and current team makeups, like what character would they drop? Like, I don't think you, like the way that off healers work right now is like Zen and Lucio kind of switch off for the off healers, and they both do a lot of off healing and they have a lot of ranged utility, and she is like worse off healing and her utility has to be in close proximity. So I think all
that kind of...
How
important is it that a character can be played competitively for Overwatch?
What?
How important is it that a character can be played competitively in Overwatch?
It's not like the end all, but I think at this current time in Overwatch, they're even at like mid ranks, there isn't like there's a meta, and it's similar to League where I think that like people are still gonna do that because they're doing the best thing. Like they know team compositions or the good characters because not only because the pros are playing them, but like the pros are playing them because they're like just the best.
But in League, in mid-tier of League, any character is viable in mid-tier of League.
Sort of. But I still think that you see like a good amount of like ranked tier whoring of like these are the big picks and bans right now. And you see that across like mid to high tier of like people, even mid tier, know the deal and they know how to abuse certain things in the meta and they know how to like build a team. So even like mid tier games end up looking at least structurally pretty similar sometimes to like higher ranked play. Am I right? Like, or
I think you're right, but I think at the same time the way that League is structured allows for any type of character to exist on a team. Like, I can't think of a character that you can't put on a team in League.
Yeah, I guess so. But those are also, like, harder... It almost helps them that they're harder positions. Because, like, of course, like, even the currently weaker AD characters can shine because... Or at least be on it, make their way onto a team because they're in that role. So, like, you can only do so much complaining if someone is picking an appropriate AD, even if it's kind of weak at the time. Whereas in Overwatch, it's like, I think you wouldn't do a lot right now with that character. And I think that like, maybe when there are more characters, she'll have a better place in like compositions, but like looking at the current characters in the game and the current way the game plays, like she's just out of place. Like she's like a character that doesn't have great existing synergies.
Are you playing a lot of that game, or are you kind of like mostly over Overwatch?
I was playing it for a little while when Year of the Dog came out, but I feel like I fell off again. Like I don't know the time always that I don't want to play Overwatch if I'm not playing with friends, and even then like I tend to get pretty bored of it fast, and that's somewhat my fault because Overwatch has developed into a more skill-oriented game, and if you're just not making the hits, then, like, you feel bad. Like, you don't feel like you're having fun if you're not doing something. So it's, like, it's been weird. It's a weird game to go in and out of because there are people who play it every single day, and they're getting better and better. And even in, like, quick play or casual kind of stuff, you still see those people who play every single day. Maybe they're not high ranked, but they're still playing every day, and they're making the game unfun.
They make the hits.
They make the hits, and I don't make the hits, so it ends up being like, and I have to like really be playing for a couple days to like get that Twitch kind of reaction back to be able to like hit these like hyper mobile targets and like understand how to do stuff without thinking in that game. So it does end up kind of being boring when I'm like waffling on every character, and I
do you
also
ever think about playing CS:GO again?
Am I thinking about it?
Do you ever?
No, I don't have the time.
Fair enough.
I put in hundreds of hours in that game when I was interested in it, and I don't think I ever got to a part where I was even like okay. And to think back, like, I would be starting from scratch, and it would take another hundreds of hours to get back into it. Like, Overwatch would be the one that if I was, like, screaming for a shooter right now, Overwatch would be the one that I would spend some time with. And after a couple, you know, after a play session or a couple play sessions in a row, a few days apart, like, I start to get it kind of back a little bit. I'm never, like, going to be great at that game, but I can start to have more fun. I feel like I don't appreciate the rate at which Overwatch gets patches, and I think that kind of turns me away a little bit. I think that they should have been releasing characters a lot faster, because there's still a lot of archetypes. Like, Brigitte is really cool, and she is an awesome archetype, and all the negative stuff I've said about her maybe could have been alleviated if there was, like, three more characters or something by now that maybe, you know, had some better synergies. And with those characters, it would feel like I had more choices when I was playing, and that with those patches, it would kind of keep me more interested. But like, think about this cycle. Like, Brigitte is, like, hinted at multiple times. It leaks that she's definitely going to be the character, and I was excited because I had seen her in a lot of the Overwatch shorts, and even when I had seen her in the most recent, like, the Reinhardt short, I saw her and was like, wow, that's a really cool, like, design on a character. She's really neat. She could make for a good Overwatch character, but I wasn't even thinking, like, I was thinking, like, man, that would be neat if in, like, years from now they gave us this character. But they were pretty fast on it, and they tease her, they finally get her, like, on the PTR. That was, like, last week. Her cosmetics kind of came out, like, yesterday, I think, I think they came out yesterday, and she won't be out this week, and she probably might not be out next week, and then eventually she comes out, and for the first couple days you can't play her because people are insta-locking her. So you can maybe get her in, like, Mystery Heroes, but she won't really become a part of the game for a little while, or at least a part of the game that I can experience, because she'll become this really frustrating, like, thing where everyone is just clamoring to play that character, and people will be bad on her. So that'll be frustrating. And this whole cycle takes like a month and a half, which I think is just like too slow. And then we have to wait another, like, they come out with characters like three or so a year. So they kind of come out like even less so than a quarter, than each quarter of the year. So like after this one comes out, the hype for like what is next in Overwatch dies down so hard for me. Cause like we're not expecting anything major for like in like maybe, you know, 2 months from then we'll have a new map or something, and then another
back
2 months
to
from
League
that
of Legends, I guess.
Like I like that, and I think Overwatch is in desperate need of faster patches to make the game more to give the game more variety and to give hero select more variety.
Sure, yeah, why not? But at least there's other stuff to play. I mean, you know,
Destiny, right?
Dead Cells.
Everyone's loving Destiny.
Big update for Dead Cells.
Are they finally going 1.0?
They're adding in the final boss of the game. It's coming out of beta. So they're not at a final release, but they're very close.
Did the update come out yet, or is the update planned?
The update is on public test realm.
Okay. I might play Dead Cells when that update hits.
Very exciting. Or are you going to wait for it to come out on Switch inevitably?
I mean, that's always what I want. I would love to see Slay the Spire on Switch.
But I am going to LA for a week at the end of April, so I'm going to be either grabbing a gaming laptop or getting some real work done on the Switch. But I thought that going to LA, you know, maybe on those plane rides would actually be a great time to get into Final Fantasy 15 for the PC, provided I get something strong enough to run it, which I probably won't. I probably can't do that.
Yeah, on a laptop, that's a hard sell. Why are you going? And, excited. Like, what's the deets? How long are you going for?
I'm going for a week. I'm just going to hang out. I'm going to go check out Riot Games. I'm going to go on a studio tour, casually drop them a resume. Check out some museums, check out some food. I want to do some I want to check out some of the fusion restaurants they've got there. Apparently they've got very good Japanese and Korean fusion restaurants. And, you know, it is a busy city, so it's not, I mean, it's kind of funny to go from New York to LA, but it is like a totally different experience aesthetically, with the type of fauna they have, with the mountains and everything that are just beyond the city limits. And it'll be nice to get out of New York, be somewhere warm in the middle of April, rent a car, drive around, just hang out.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. You're only staying in LA, it sounds like. I was way bigger fan of NorCal. I don't like SoCal as much, and I didn't like LA that much, but maybe because you're doing different things, I didn't get a chance to do the Riot thing. I think that would be really fun. So maybe you'll have a different experience, or maybe be able to say, no, you're wrong. LA is sick. And then
I'm not doing any of the Hollywood stuff.
Okay, good. Because that stuff sucks.
I have zero interest.
I got dragged along with that. I didn't want to do that. That stuff is sad, actually. That stuff is legitimately just earth-shakingly sad, because I did this thing where I was my sister especially really wanted to drive in one of those celebrity watch things where they give you a tour of Hollywood kind of, and drive you around and say Will Smith lives here, this creepy ass dude, he was not supposed to be creepy, but he came off really creepy to me because he knew all the, because this is inherently creepy to me, and it's part of the tour, but he knows Will Smith has a black Escalade, so he'll look in the driveway oh, there's Will Smith's Escalade, he must be home now, let's see if we can crane our necks and stop in front of his house to get a look at him. And it's that is mad creepy.
That's not what I'm about.
That is awful. That is truly awful. You kind of It was the first thing that made me, because typically my thoughts when I think of oh, it's hard being a star, you got all these cameras and lights and all this publicity, and you can't get away from the lights, you can't just be yourself. I always thought well, I don't give a shit because they live in mansions. So when I'm making 1% money, if people are taking pictures of me all the time, maybe that's the trade-off you got to make. But when I saw this, it was is that really how creepy it is? You can't even be outside. And then not even paparazzi are pulling up. It's, you got these slovenly New Yorkers that are in a dumb tour bus that are craning their heads to catch a glimpse of you, washing your Escalade. And it's that is a nightmare. That is true nightmare. That is truly hell on earth.
Well, it sounds like you got something out of the trip, at least.
Yeah, the cult of worship is horrible. That cult of personality around obsessing over stars is disgusting. It's more disgusting than I had originally thought. It's not something that I remotely engage with. I don't read about stars' lives. I don't give a shit about meeting stars. I'm not someone that would go wild over meeting Ryan Gosling or something. It would be cool to be oh shit, that is Ryan Gosling, but I don't think I would even want to go over and bother them with that kind of stuff.
I don't know if I could be that way about anybody. The only time when I think that would be appropriate is if there's someone who I respect who I think maybe doesn't get that sort of praise, like all, like literally all the time.
Yeah. So I in that vein, the only time I've ever kind of done this was at PAXes. I attended the first PAX East and then a couple PAX Easts after that. And when I was a huge fan of the Joystick podcast. So Joystick was still currently around when PAX East first started. And I like fanboyed out over meeting Justin McElroy and Ludwig Kitzmann and Chris Grant and had them sign my badge and like talk to them a little bit. And like that was unreal. And that would have been a time also where like Justin doesn't have my brother and me, and they're games journalists, so like they don't get as many people freaking out over them. And also is something that like every day of my life was like sitting around and when in free time and refreshing Joystick. So I had more of a personal reason for liking them, and it wasn't that I liked them just because like they're in movies. It's like I respected the craft. It was like I want to do stuff in the video game industry, and you're doing it, and you're doing it so well, and you kind of gave me my drive to do that. So it's hard not to want to go up to someone and like that and say like, you don't like, because they're not getting pulled over all the time, but they gave you like a dream. So it's I think it makes a little bit more sense to be like more succinctly to go over and be like, oh hi, I'm like a big fan of the podcast. I'm not going to be like, you know, craning my neck over Justin McElroy's fence or something at his house. Like I met him in an environment where I just watched the Joystick podcast live, and it made sense to go up.
A safe space, if you will.
What?
You met him in a safe space, if you will, not like in his private,
yes,
like living.
I'm not chasing situation. Him down at home and making it so that he can't breathe without getting, you know, slop messes staring at him, like crowds of slop messes.
I wonder if that's what the boys deal with these days, the brothers. Probably not to the full extent, but maybe a little bit.
I don't know, man.
Depending on the crowd.
Yeah, depending on the crowd, I guess. I mean, now they're kind of tight with Lin-Manuel Miranda and more recently, apparently, Jimmy Buffett. So Justin is, you know, he's rubbing the right elbows, right? Like
the Jimmy Buffett episode was one of my favorite episodes.
That was a great episode, right?
And, you know, they're doing some cool stuff on the Adventure Zone.
I should get back onto that.
They already finished a campaign, and they've done two mini campaigns, and they're on their third or maybe even their fourth miniature campaign by now. It's cool to follow.
When you say finished a campaign, you mean that original one?
Yes.
Okay, so I don't know if I would, because I got pretty deep in that, but I don't really remember much. I don't know if I would want to start that all over again. That actually kind of sounds like a cool idea now that I'm thinking about it, now that it's kind of complete. Or wait till they start like a bigger new campaign.
I think it's worth seeing through to the end, because I think that the end of that is very like heartfelt. Griffin put like years of his life into making it. And I think that the time he spent wasn't wasted. And I think seeing that to its conclusion makes a lot of sense. But if it's too much, I mean, you could always just like pop in. I would recommend at least checking out Adventure Zone Amnesty, which is one of the newer ones, and just seeing if that rubs you the right way.
I mean, you know, I'm playing Path of Exile. That is the ultimate game to be like, I've exhausted a lot of the podcasts I listen to. How can I dive deeper? Because, you know,
Sure.
That is a lot of time of like, that is one of the best podcast games. You spend a lot of time doing the same things over again. And the only thing I'm really listening to, because I have everything turned down, and the only thing I have turned up is those item sounds.
Hell yeah. Same here.
So my, the way my path sounds when I'm playing is like the slightest, like you hear almost like off in the distance, like the sounds of the exile, like, and like making noises, and I'm making the Texasonic slam, and that's like psh, psh, psh. And then all of a sudden something drops to like boom.
I'm right there with you.
It's great. That's the only way to play.
And that's the deal with games. This has been WTDG Podcast. You can find us online at WTDGpodcast.com, on Twitter at WTDGpodcast, and on iTunes at What's the Deal with Games, where you can rate, comment, and subscribe to the show.
Thank you, Ryan Galloway and Crying, for the use of your music. We use the intro and outro Revive off the new album Beyond the Fleeting Gales. You can find them at the Run for Cover Bandcamp.
Beyond.
Wait, hold on.
That's an old one.
That's not the correct send-off. Kiss your dad square on the lips.
Oops.
Oh, did it again.
I thought we came up with one last week.
I mean,
Battlefield Hardline sucks.
That was the one, right?
That's it.
Wait, hold on. Is that it? Or is it... Did we ever come up with one, or do we just not have one yet?
We just don't have it yet.
We just don't have it yet. Finn's famous line from Star Wars Episode 8. The Big Jedi.
That's what it's called.
We just don't have it yet. Rey says, give me the lightsaber. We got to kill these Tauntauns. And then Finn says, we just don't have it yet. And that's...
These Tauntauns?
Yeah, they gotta kill a bunch of Tauntauns.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
I haven't seen the movie, but I assume that's what it's about.
No, I think you got it.
Off topic, I saw Disaster Artist.
How'd you like it?
Fantastic movie. It made me think about The Room, which I already really appreciate in a kind of completely different way.
I've been, everyone's talking about this movie Annihilation, and I'm thinking I got to go see that soon. And everyone is always, Ryan, everyone is always just talking up that movie pass. But I don't know if that's my lifestyle.
Are people talking that up as much as they're talking up Black Panther?
No. But in with the voices I hear from day to day, the answer is yes.
I hear good things about the Panther. No. I feel sad because, like, I think more than ever, there have been a lot of movies that I do want to see. And the only movie I really saw like last year was like Coco, and Coco kicks ass. If you haven't seen Coco, watch it.
Hell yeah!
But I'm just now seeing Disaster Artist, and I'll see. Like, it's sad that I never got a chance to see Last Jedi in theaters, so I'm gonna end up seeing it on Amazon. And then Annihilation is probably another one. I missed Blade Runner. I wanted to see that jam. Now I'm gonna have to pay to see that on Amazon.
I didn't even see the Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, that's the one I wanted to see. Black Panther.
I'm missing all the movies. But then there's TV to watch, too. I've been so hot on Silicon Valley recently. That show is amazing.
You know my favorite part of Black Panther, which is another movie I haven't seen, is when T'Challa says to Wakanda, which is I know that it's the fictional land that he lives in. But I assume that halfway through the movie, Wakanda becomes corporealized as like a humanoid woman, and she can throw adamantite or whatever out of her skin or something. And he's like fighting all these enemies, and she's throwing adamantite at him to punch with. And then when he punches, he uses up the adamantite, and then he's like, "Give me one more adamantite." Brass knuckle. And then she's like, "We just don't have it yet."
Oh, you love that part.
I like that part.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you, James.
Good night.
We just don't have it yet.